You're from England, aren't you? From Britain?
That's correct.
Are you suggesting, Bob, that the English, the British system of education is vastly inferior, a little bit inferior?
Well, there must be something wrong, or they wouldn't have to come out here and cause the trouble they are. I'm sure that Canadians emigrating to Britain are not acting the way Mr. Clark is and getting our benefits.
Okay, let me ask you if I could then, Bob. Could, what is it specifically that concerns you about the activities of John Clark and his followers?
Well, I think he's too arrogant at what he's doing. And
no, not the personality, the actual activities. I mean, you may perceive him as arrogant. That's a valid comment because it's your opinion. But what things has he done that bother you?
No, it's just a general feeling of the people coming out here and causing trouble, and most of them are from the other side.
How has he caused trouble, in your own opinion?
Well, what he's done today, what he's doing now at the City Hall, I think is ridiculous.
If I might make a suggestion, if we could have a perhaps more valid discussion, let me pose this question to you. Let us imagine for the moment that I'm a native-born Canadian with a Canadian accent. Now, perhaps you could tell me what I'm doing wrong.
Well, all I can say is there must be other ways of doing things that embarrass the City Hall people by having these sit-ins in the park and...
Well, I don't wish to appear arrogant, but I'm open to suggestions if you wish to propose other tactics.
Oh, well... It's no use saying anymore. I think
But is there use in saying something more? Because obviously you were concerned enough to call, and I appreciate your calling, and I respect your point of view. Do you have at all, Bob, a suggestion for a tactic that would be appropriate and proper in your own mind for John and his group to take over these issues?
Well, it just seems to point out that these people from the other side are not happy over here. And we didn't ask them to come out here, and if they don't like our system, they should go back home.
Yeah, but you see, the point is that most of the... again, we come down to this disproportionate sort of interest in John Clark, which I'm telling you is not right. What I'm doing is I happen to be a spokesperson for an organisation, and that organisation, made up of people from various places, including Canada, overwhelmingly Canada, are engaged in a particular campaign on a particular issue. So... Again, what is the LUUW doing wrong? I think the tactics that we're employing are necessary and have been forced upon us.
Well, I'm going to say something about that. I don't believe that the tactics are necessary. I don't believe that sit-ins in the mayor's office and sit-in in the park accomplish. In fact, I think they do worse. In fact, I don't think they do your cause any good, John. I've told you, we have a democratic process, and I'm only suggesting that, sure, it's aggravating, it's frustrating, but the only thing in our democratic process, when you don't believe that the politicians are being responsive, you continue to make representations. I proposed a meeting with you this morning, and I intend to follow that up with a personal meeting with you and your other people to see if we can discuss matters of mutual concern to better the system.
Well, you summed it up very well, John.
What's your response? Well, that's Joe. Your response, John?
Joe, that's...
Well, hang on, sir. I want to hear what John has to say to Mr. Fontana indicated.
Well, I would say that we certainly are prepared to meet with Alderman Fontana. We welcome such a meeting. But I would reject the concept that there was some gradual, meaningful process of welfare reform going on in the City of London until such time that the LUUW hotheads came in and wrecked the whole thing. On the contrary, I think if there is going to be change, it has been initiated precisely by the kind of vigorous tactics that we've employed, and we endorse those tactics here today.
Okay, but is there not a point to be said for the fact that Joe Fontana is saying, along with many others who are elected officials, look, this is our position, we were put here in a democratic fashion, mm-hmm. You disagree with the rapidity of the reform or whatever, they're not doing it fast enough for you. Does that give you the right, John Clark, to sit in on the mayor's office, break the law and trespass? Does it give you the right to set up tents in Victoria Park? What laws are being contravened there, I have no idea, if any. But does that justify your action, and how far would you really go?
Well, I would say that that unemployment, real suffering, and what is being inflicted on people is a very, very powerful catalyst for forcing people to do things they may never have considered doing before.
So it does give you the right, you feel, in your own mind?
If you're asking us, did we have the right to barge in, has been said, into the mayor's office, yes, I would, even if I'm accused of arrogance, say that we think we do have that right.
How far would you go, John Clark? Would you turn over cars? Would you smash windows? Would you deface public property?
Well, I'm very glad, actually, that you asked me that question, because I noticed, I only caught a snippet of it in the news bulletin, from sit-ins at City Hall to shoot-ins in Quebec. I think that's, I take some exception to that. The LUUW is certainly not going to be engaging in violent acts, and we reject that sort of inference very, very hotly, frankly.
Well, I strongly object to what John said, that indicated that he will do anything possible in order to put his point across. He has indicated, and I think it was quoted, that if City Council wants force, he's going to give us force. Mm-hmm. Let me just indicate to you, there was another group, the Cheyenne Coalition, on welfare mm-hmm. reform that came before our committee, and lo and behold, their tactics were very nice, and you know what we did? They brought forward two or three proposals that the committee will look at very closely, and I think we will change, because they made representations. We did not change the welfare policies, and we have made some changes because John Clark and the LUUW forced upon us. They made some good points. We've always said we are willing to listen, and if the points are good and the legislation is wrong and our municipality is wrong, we can change them. We don't need force to show that.
We'll be back with more right after these messages.
And get a job in a profession that I've been trained in. I'd like to find out how you make a living while you're the chairman or head of this particular union.
Okay, well, I've lived on UIC and I've lived on welfare. We're now in a situation where the LUUW has established a staff fund. Two people are kept on full-time. I am one of them. But if there's any thought that I'm making some princely salary, I can assure you that I'm not. I'm doing about the same as I was on the welfare rolls.
When you came to Canada, though, you did have employment, didn't you, John?
Oh, yes. I worked for 3 years in Westinghouse, Canada.
And you were laid off, I understand.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
Well, okay. So you're making your money from people who are on welfare and who are on unemployment, who are giving you a pittance so that you may live. Well, that's very nice. First of all, I don't agree with your tactics. It's been said before by other people. One of the problems that I see is, first of all, if you have the right to sit in a city hall and set up tents in a park, which under most circumstances, if Joe can give me the information on this, I believe that for Home County Folk Festival, the permits have to be granted for tents to be set up in the park. And
what is the point here, though, John?
You're going about doing things that are against the law, okay? You're asking that the society as a whole should not hold you responsible, or should not hold you in contempt for breaking the law, that we should be forgiving because you have tough circumstances. Well, sir, I have worked 3 months in my chosen profession in the last 3 years. Other than that, I have pumped gas, I have cleaned basements, I have cleaned out septic tanks, I have cleaned out pools, I have done numerous jobs other than that of which I have been trained. And I don't feel that you, above all people, who are taking money from people who don't have money, who are probably justifiably unemployed, have the right to break laws in this city, in this country. If you are finding that other cities are giving things to people, that London, through years of breeding and training, if you want to call it that, have laid down rules that say, hey, this is beyond our rules and regulations, so therefore it doesn't affect us, or, you know, you're not going to get these things, then go to the cities that are less discriminatory, if you want to call it that. I'm probably rambling.
Yeah, you are, and I don't say that with offense, John, but I guess what you're really saying succinctly here is that you don't agree with these tactics. You don't think any group has the right to break laws, whether they be involved in sit-ins or tents in public parks. John, what can you say that really hasn't been already said to our caller?
Well, just one observation coming out of the trade union movement. There was a time when trade unions were illegal and people got shipped off to Botany Bay for being members of trade unions. They fought back against those laws, so the LUUW is following in a strong tradition.
Well, John, I'm going to give you the last word here.
Okay, there is a company here in town that was family-operated, that was non-union, that treated its people with respect, that made a good product. That company now employs less than 10% of what it originally employed 20 years ago, strictly because of unions. And if you intend to continue breaking the laws in this city, then somewhere along the line, you want a confrontation, mister, you're going to find me standing in the crowd, and I'm going to deck you. And I'm going to plead that it's perfectly legal because you're breaking the law, so me breaking the law has, you know, no bearing on anything.
If you're going to do that, will you leave your name and address and phone number with Jeff Bingle, my producer?
Wayne, you know me.
Oh, I don't know you. I don't recognize the voice, nor do I know you. But you see, what I have to ask myself at this point, John, and I say this to you without offense, are you just blowing hot air for the sake, or do you really mean that you'd stand up and hit John in the nose? I mean, are you really serious, or are you just saying that because you're somewhere in a Canadian kitchen on a telephone?
Hey, no. If he wants to impede my free walk through Victoria Park, and I want to walk through a specific spot where he's got a tent set up, I'm going to walk through it, and I'm.
But that's a little different than talking about getting into a fistfight.
Okay, fine. He wants to stand up or sit in City Hall, then I, as far as I'm concerned, have the right to walk into City Hall, grab him by the scruff of the neck, and chuck him out the door.
Yeah, but you wouldn't do that, though, would you?
You bet your life I would.
Well,
I'm busting my butt to earn a buck to make something that I believe in to survive.
Yeah, but you have very strong opinions about this gentleman's tactics and those of his groups. Then you're saying that you would break the law in the same way as you feel he is. What does that make you?
Okay, he's saying that he's not breaking the law. He's saying that he's beyond the law. So if he's beyond the law, so am I. I'm not breaking any laws if he's not.
Thank you for your call, John.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Check out all the latest Ford lawn.
For those of you who are waiting on the lines, we thank you for your patience. We will try to get to you as soon as we can. You're next, Joe. Go ahead, please.
Well, good morning, Wayne.
Hi.
I'm just phoning to support the London Union of Unemployed Workers and the Coalition on Welfare.
Okay, may I identify you or not?
No. I don't know. I didn't hear you mention.
No, may I do that now, Joe?
Sure, if you want.
Joe Barth is with Plowshare, has been a guest in our program. You're also a candidate for the NDP in the upcoming election, right?
That's right.
Okay.
I'd like to make 3 points why the charges should be dropped.
Okay. And let me ask Joe Fontana to perk his ears up at this point.
The first is a moral issue. It was just last week that church leaders issued a statement on the Canadian economy in which they referred to a moral disorder in our economy today. And I really believe that the case of the two women, Brenda and Gabriel, at Fanshawe and their struggle for welfare support while pursuing their high school upgrading studies is an excellent example of the moral disorder in our economy.
Okay.
People are denied jobs by an economic system which presently has forced about 1.5 to 2 million people out of work, and then people who are forced onto welfare and who try to upgrade themselves so that they may become more employable and thus get off welfare.
Okay.
They're defeated in their efforts by the very welfare system they're trying to free themselves from.
Point two.
Pardon?
You have 3 points here, and I'm trying to hurry you along.
Well, the second one was the economic one. That was made by an earlier caller, where the city blindly follows the Welfare Act, and they're willing to support these women if they go to high school for 4 years at, say, $4,000 a year. It's going to cost 16 years to get a high school education, whereas by going to the Fanshawe upgrading course in 9 months, they can get the equivalent and get on their way about improving their employability.
Point
so in an economic, from an economic point, our elected officials, you would think they would be pounding on the doors in Ottawa or in Ontario.
Point three,
to get things changed. And the third point is that elected officials, they must be available to meet with citizens.
Okay.
These people, they were quiet, they were very orderly, they were gentle, and they visited the mayor's office. The mayor was in town and he was available. Only he, maybe he wants to say where he was, but I don't know. But he chose not to meet with them. And these are very reasonable people, and I wonder who's not being reasonable here. I would suggest that possibly it's the elected officials that are not being reasonable.
Let me give
Joe. I feel the charges should be dropped.
Let me give Joe a chance to respond to that then. But before I do, the mayor is on record, as I understand, at least in the press reports, he considers some of these tactics to be bullying tactics, quote unquote. Do you perceive them as bullying tactics at all in any way?
Well, I wonder if there's maybe not a double standard here, Wayne. Like, it, you know, if 11 burns of business dropped into the mayor's office to stress a point, a disagreement that they had, I kind of bet that the mayor would drop what he was doing and make fast tracks to get down to meet with him.
But you could be wrong because
he didn't do that in this case.
You could be wrong, though. That's your opinion, right?
I'm just throwing that out as a suggestion.
Okay, let's hear.
The possibility of a double standard.
Let's hear from Joe.
Well, first of all, I'm surprised Joe, as an elected or as a candidate for election, you would purport to support tactics that are contrary to the laws of this land in order to make your case. As a politician, I'm sure you will learn quickly that, in fact, you will have representations by a number of vested interest groups and other people that want you to change the laws and the statutes of this country. But there is a process available to all people to do that. And no matter if you indicated that there is a moral question here, the morality, in my opinion, stems from the fact of responsibility and accepting the democratic process that we have in this country. True, the economy is in bad shape. True, governments at all levels are trying to come to grips with this problem that we have. And governments at all levels are trying their best through unemployment insurance and through welfare. But to suggest that the city blindly follows the General Welfare Act to its very decimal points and commas is incorrect. We have, as I said at the beginning of the program, I think responded to the needs of the community. Since 1980, when we spent $6 million on welfare, to 1984, where we will spend close to $18,613,000, I think is responding to the needs of our community. And that's not to suggest that we are perfect. That's not to suggest that we can't do more for our people. But we can do more for our people within the context of our democratic system. And to suggest that you are endorsing the tactics, the unlawful tactics of groups, is unbelievable to me, Joe.
You have the last word, Joe. Go ahead.
Joe mentions things like democratic process and responsibility. And yeah, I really believe in the democratic process. And part of the democratic process is elected officials have to meet and dialogue and consult with the people. And the responsibility, they have a responsibility to meet with them.
Well, Joe, we meet.
People go down to meet in a very gentle, quiet manner, and if he chooses not to meet with them, then I think that's where the conflict arises, and the perpetrator is really him. It was him, his decision not to meet with them.
The issue is not Al Gleason. The issue is we have procedures and rules in the city. The London Union of Unemployed Workers and the Welfare Coalition has been before our committee. We have a committee system in the municipality of London. We welcome people to come to that committee where we can hear their concerns, and to suggest that Mayor Al Gleason or any elected official is not accessible to his constituents, I think is highly irresponsible. I have ward meetings practically every Saturday where I invite my constituents to come and talk to me and to discuss problems of mutual concern. But the issue is not Al Gleason not meeting, because we do have procedures and rules by which people can talk to their elected representatives.
Okay, Joe, we're going to have to leave it there. John, you want to comment? Go ahead. Joe, I'm sorry. Joe, I'm sorry. I must. And the reasons why are because of all my other callers.
Need the London Union of Unemployed Workers, because there's 23,800 people unemployed.
Thank you, Joe. John, go ahead, quick.
Well, I'd just like to thank Mr. Barth for supporting us in the way he did. I think that a couple of comments were made that were very important here.
Okay, can you hang on to them, and we'll do it when we come back.
Amazing.
Here you go, buddy. Big BF Norman Rockwell mugs for only $4.99. How about that for a Mother's Day gift?
Who's Norman Rockwell?
Okay, forget the mug. How about a really spiffy fashion watch?
She has one.
Okay, perfume, cologne, box chocolates.
Doesn't Maybe have something really, really special for my mom?
Oh, you bet. Your neighborhood Big B Drugstore is a Mother's Day gift that absolutely nobody else has.
What is it?
Right here, the Big B Combo Pack.
Wow.
You get a box of Pot of Gold chocolates, a heart-shaped genuine crystal jewelry box, and a Mother's Day card that actually plays...
music!
All gift wrapped for your mom for only $9.99.
Did those guys at Big V make that just for my mom?
Is your mom special?
You bet.
Well, then Big V made it just for her.
I love those Big V guys.
Big V Drugstores.
Attention, all London passengers. The $15 connection is now arriving. Starting May 1st, passengers wishing to fly Air Ontario to Toronto will pay only $15 when connecting with Air Canada to anywhere in North America.
Fly Air Ontario from London for just $15 each way when connecting with Air Canada in Toronto. Use it with all types of fares, even seat sales. This is subject to government approval, so see your travel agent for more details of the $15 connection.
Flowers are probably one of nature's most beautiful creations. The ideal way to say those special things to special people. Sandy's Flowers has all kinds of flowers, freshly cut in beautiful arrangements, and dried and silk flowers, too. For any occasion, from anniversaries to weddings to simple hellos, Sandy's can help. For different ways to say different things, depend on Sandy's Flowers, 1240 Commissioners Road in the Byron Village Center.
Friars 2 is proclaiming every Tuesday Super Teriyaki Tuesday. That means you can get a boneless breast of chicken teriyaki dinner with Friars' famous terry dip for only $6.25. Or if you prefer, have a 10-ounce, that's a 10-ounce Red Brand top sirloin teriyaki steak, fully aged and broiled to your preference, for the incredible price of only $6.95. That's Super Teriyaki Tuesday, every Tuesday, 4 till midnight at Friars 2, Wellington and Horton.
Tomorrow morning is open topic day, so that means anything you'd care to discuss, you want to get back into this one, by all means, feel free. On Thursday, Dr. Jack Albanin, child psychologist. That should be an interesting program. On Friday, family court judge Maurice Chenet. We hope you'll be with us for every one of them. John, I know you had a couple of things, so the floor is yours.
Yeah, a couple of points come up. We would not be able to say that the city has done nothing to meet the needs of people on welfare. We would only say that the city has done as little as possible to meet the needs of people on welfare.
Was $18 million as little as possible?
The point is this, is that to suggest that the welfare rolls, because they have climbed, or yes, should I should say welfare expenditure has climbed, is to suggest that the city has a big heart, is really nonsense. There has been an economic depression. The need for welfare has grown enormously and is growing. The city has done everything it can to limit the additional expenses, so the impressive $18 million doesn't impress us very much. There are a whole range of specific policies in which this city can be shown to be palpably more brutal than other places. And we are dealing with the General Welfare Assistance Act that is in itself vicious. The most liberal and generous interpretation you could possibly make of that act would still not adequately meet the needs, even the basic needs, of people in desperate circumstances. And this city makes it worse than it needs to be.
What about these people who call up and say that they are unemployed, and the chasm between what you're saying here and the things that you do is so vast? You don't believe that you speak for a majority of people on welfare, do you, in the City of London?
I would believe that most people that live on welfare assistance would be very, very sympathetic to what the LUUW is doing, and that a great number of them are becoming involved in what the LUUW is doing. There are people, of course, who would disagree, but that in itself is a somewhat alarming figure. When a man can phone up and say that he considers himself privileged to be living on a cheque for $346 a month, then I think in itself is a testimony to the kind of demoralisation and degradation that can set in when people are forced to subsist on a level of basic biological existence, and not even that.
What would you think would be a good figure per month for the average person on welfare? Was 600, 1,000? What do you think?
Well, as far as we're concerned, people have a right to either be provided with jobs, or they have a right to a decent income. I'm talking about an income that would match what people could expect to make if a job was available for them. We recognise that is a goal that the LUUW operating in one city is not going to be able to achieve, but we do at least insist that this city does everything it can to enforce the most liberal and generous interpretation of the present act.
Regardless of the cost, regardless of the economics involved, and let the devil take the hindquarter, being the property taxpayers and the provincial taxpayers of Ontario.
Well, one thing, it is of course monstrous that you have a situation where 20% of the bill has to be footed by the municipality. We would reject that system. We think that the thing should be provincially administered, as is the Family Benefits Act.
But it's going to cost somebody. It's going to cost the people working.
It's indeed going to cost. And in the long term, I would say that it is precisely the banks, the corporations that are putting people out on the streets. So I don't see why the ordinary working people as taxpayers should pay should be providing for people who don't have jobs. I would agree to that extent.
Well, I guess
the situation is one in which we have to fight in the immediate sense with the system that we are dealing with at the moment. And if the municipality is as bad as that may be responsible for administering general welfare assistance, then we have to tackle the city, and we're going to continue to tackle the city.
Well, can I say, Wayne,
sure,
first of
quickly,
all,
please,
the rates under the general welfare are not established by the city, are established by the mm-hmm. province. Mm-hmm. So if Mr. Clark indicates that the funding, at least the rates and the welfare benefits are not adequate, he should make representations to the province on that basis. Mm-hmm. But I tend to believe that we have 4,600 people on our welfare rolls now, that I don't believe that he represents the majority of those people. I hear from from people on receiving benefits, and for the most part, even though the levels of assistance are not adequate, they are at least pleased that this system exists, where in fact on a temporary basis we are able to assist our people through unemployment and through welfare. God forbid if we wouldn't have these safety nets in place for our people as we did in
the
1920s.
Nobody's going to disagree with that. I guess the thing that strikes me, you know, personal opinion, somebody wants to differ with me, please do. I welcome that. Seems to me that if we could ever get a finger on how many people you represent, you know, not that bigness is better or numbers or everything, that it might help us to put the whole thing in perspective. And I guess the only way we're going to find out is, you've told me before on this radio program that you want to run in the next municipal election for an aldermanic post. Do you still want to do that?
Well, it may be the case that we're going to decide to run
situation. Do you want to do that or not?
Well, we have taken no concrete decision to run anybody in any election.
Is it a strong option?
I think that might be a tactic that we would employ, but that's not immediately the issue. The LUUW has a membership of about 500 people.
Okay.
We would suspect that considerable numbers of people, we have strong reason to believe that considerable numbers of people on welfare support what we're doing. And in any case, as far as we're concerned, we're directly representing the interests of people. We get checks for people on a day-by-day basis. And we have made some meaningful changes in welfare policy, and I'm sure that we're going to win more.
We'll be back with more of your calls right after this.
Interiors 84 is coming May 13th till June 10th. See Hillcrest
for that. Sue, you're next on CFPL. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I was just calling to give my support to John Clark.
Are you a member of the union, if I could ask?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I would like to say that although Mr. Fontana comes across as a very reasonable and sympathetic human being on the radio show, I'm afraid that one only has to attend a city council meeting to be aware of the fact that he represents the main body of opinion at city council, which is to take a very contemptuous and snide attitude, unsympathetic attitude towards the poor and the unemployed welfare recipients. You just have to take a look at the way that Mr. Gleason behaved last night. Rather than having the guts to wait until 7:30 when the meeting was supposed to be, when our point was supposed to be brought up, instead they chose to sneak it in at 5 o'clock. I mean, this is the kind of attitude that these people have, that they simply they know that they're wrong, and they just simply don't want to confront the people who are being attacked by the London City Council. The attitude is extremely contemptuous.
Okay, can we pause there for a second to have him respond to some of the comments you're making and maybe have a little dialogue?
Sure.
Well, I think my record will stand for itself. I've represented Ward 3 since 1978, and I have a great many people in Ward 3 who I'm sure on welfare assistance that I've helped. But to suggest that I am contemptuous and unsympathetic as well as a majority members of council, I think is entirely unfair. I believe that we are acting in a very responsible manner. We may object to the tactics of Mr. Clark and his group in the way they tried to bring their point across, but I can only tell you that when each and every group at any number of our committees comes forward with a concern, we legitimately listen to those concerns, and if we can try and help them, we do. And to suggest that we are a very hard and callous group of people that don't care about our citizens, I think is highly irresponsible. I personally answer 15 to 20 calls from my constituents a week, and for the most part, if they're on welfare assistance, they ask for my help, and I do help them, and as I'm sure that most aldermen in their respective wards do.
Sue, do you believe him?
Well, let me put it.
Do you believe what he said to you, if I could ask you that?
You know, I just have to take. I've seen the way that he behaves in city council meetings.
Yeah, but what he's just said here now, though, do you believe that?
I mean, the truth, it may be people in Ward 3 that he serves very well. Yeah. That may well be the fact. But okay. The point is that he just simply can't take credit for, and he and the city council can't take credit for what the London Union of Unemployed Workers has accomplished.
Well, I'll take.
Is that they have forced them to either speed up or to initiate procedures that have helped their welfare recipients in this city. I mean, I think I'm really annoyed that Mr. Fontana is trying to take credit for these things. It's a fact that the city would never have gone ahead and done the things that they've done if the London Union were not there taking them the whole way. And Mr. Fontana simply cannot take credit for it. It belongs to John Clark and the London Union of Unemployed Workers.
Well,
and as far as I'm concerned, they can carry right on. The law wasn't written by God. It was written by people. And if the law is wrong, then it's justified that the people must do something.
Well, I feel privileged. I feel privileged to represent the citizens of London, and I will take some of the credit, as well as some members of council will take credit for making London what it is. It's a very beautiful place. It's a very positive place. We are aggressively trying to grow and develop and to provide jobs. That is the key. To suggest that there's always a negative factor to politics, most of us have been trying, because the answer to all of the concerns and ills of our society in London revolves around the fact of being able to provide jobs for our people. And I take great pleasure in trying to be one member of council who is trying to promote the city, who is trying to bring industry into the city so that we can provide jobs for our people and in fact get them back to work, and then we wouldn't have to worry about the people on welfare and unemployment if we can create the jobs, because that's the issue, is providing for our people.
A lot of people, Joe Fontana, will say, some people will say, you don't come across as very sympathetic. You don't come across as a champion of the downtrodden or the oppressed or whatever you want to call
them.
There is a perception out there.
Well, I'll let the people of Ward 3 speak to that in 1985. I feel that I bring a reasonable and a responsible approach to city council. The fact that I may disagree with John Clark and certain members of his group doesn't make me out to be uncaring. I try and bring a reasonable, common sense approach. John and I don't believe, probably have different goals and objectives. How we achieve those goals and objectives is what it's all about. His tactics suggest that you, in order to get someplace, that you can try and be unlawful, do things illegal to try and get your point across. I'm suggesting.
Let me give you two quotes. One was, everybody who's over 45 should be able. Can get a job if they want one. And the other one is, oh, not more of that BS. I mean, these are the statements which have been attributed.
Okay, let's see if he made those statements.
I believe on the issue of over 45, the Welfare Coalition had indicated that it seemed to me, at least by the tone of their letter, that they suggested that people over 45 were washed up and could no longer contribute to society. And I suggest at the age of 45, there's an awful lot that can be contributed still to society. The fact that I might have said BS alluded to the constant negative tone of Wilma Bolton's constant remarks, and sometimes they are BS.
Well, I think a lot more of what you say is than what she says. Your whole attitude to the city council is that whatever Wilma Bolton says, as soon as she starts to speak, you can just hear and go, oh, not again, because she's not pro-business. Well, and yeah, as far as I'm concerned, most of these situations that have arisen have been precipitated by Mr. Gleason and by yourself. You know, here we go again. Here are these people trying at it again.
Well, maybe I can only suggest that Wilma is one member of council out of 19. The political process and the democratic process is that you have to convince a majority of members of council to change the law. She has been very ineffective in that, so maybe she should reassess her own position.
Sue, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you for your input. Bye-bye now. I do want to mention at this point, as far as Wilma Bolton is concerned, we contacted her this morning as the result of the events at council last night and the censure she received from some council members to be with us today. She cannot be with us today because she does have a job to attend to and couldn't be with us on the telephone in a standby capacity either. So I wanted to make that quite clear to the audience today. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned.
Serving you that good old-fashioned way at Jenkins Seed House.
Jenkins Seed House can help you enhance the look of your garden with a large selection of over 15 different varieties of stones and bark ground covers. They're ideal for around the garden or trees and shrubs to give that decorative look. See them soon at Jenkins Seed House, right downtown at King and Rideout, with free parking for 100 cars. Call 432-6777. Gold Expo 84, a virtual Fort Knox in London. For 3 days only, this immense display of gold will be offered to the public at next to and below wholesale value. $2 million worth of gold chains, bracelets, rings, and pendants, next to and below wholesale. You're invited to view this most extensive display of gold Thursday through Saturday at the Diamond the Jewelry Warehouse, 311 Wharncliffe Road South. No dealers, please. Old is new again at Mark's Work Warehouse. Take your old jeans into Mark's and trade up to a brand new pair. Save $5 on a fantastic selection of Levi's, Lee's, GWG's, and Wranglers. Regularly $28.95 to $32.95, now just $23.95 to $27.95 with your $5 trade-in. Old is new again at Mark's Work Warehouse. Located at 555 Wellington Road and 630 Dundas Street. Open nightly till 9, Saturday till 6.
Save up to 50% now on beautiful solid hardwood furniture at Corner Furniture. It's a stock reduction sale and you're invited to save up to 50% on some of London's most beautiful unfinished furniture. Choose from pine, oak, maple, and birch furniture. All rugged, long-lasting, and best of all, up to 50% off. Tables, chairs, bookcases, even 7 different roll-top desks and more. Yours up to 50% off at the home of unfinished furniture, Corner Furniture, 700 York.
This is Ann Robel. Today on Lifestyles, we'll hear two doctors battle it out on the issue of a physician's role in society. Do they belong on the pedestal we've put them on? We'll talk about tea for 2 or 1 or 4 with someone from the Tea Council of Canada, and we'll get a preview of Interiors 84. If you like to dream of what it would be like to have $1 million, that's the place to visit. Hope you'll join me for Lifestyles today, 12:45 to 2 p.m.
Thank you for waiting, Betty. You're on CFPL.
Good morning, Wayne.
Hi.
Wayne, I'm really at a loss when it comes to understanding the logic of our elected representatives and city council. Perhaps Mr. Fontana could clear up some questions for me. Mr. Fontana, to me, and I'm not an extremely intelligent person, but it seems that the same council who are denying our less fortunate citizens a right to an education and at the same time a roof over their heads and the food in their stomachs. Over the past few years, Mr. Fontana, this council in all its wisdom have given a huge amount of financial backing to Theatre London, which 75% of our population will never see the inside of. They have built a two-pad arena, Nichols Arena, at a stated cost at $2.5 million. However, you and I both know that the cost of that arena was well over $3 million.
Okay, the question of priorities and perceptions, I guess. Yeah. What do you think?
First of all, let me tell you, Betty, you sound very intelligent to me. As far as the only issue, of course, that we have to deal with in our $150 million budget is not only welfare. We have to deal with a number of issues. The one that you suggested in terms of Theatre London, I didn't support the Theatre London, so I'm with you on that respect. I suggested that that perhaps it should be self-sufficient and not necessarily have to have a loan from the city. With respect to the arena, in our priorities in terms of recreation facilities for our children and for people in general, that is part and parcel of the whole package of municipal government and its responsibilities to the people. So you have to look at both sides. The only issue is not welfare. The issue runs the gamut from everything from street cleaning to welfare, to creation of jobs, to luring industry into this community. So it's much more complicated than just one issue.
Okay, if you're talking about luring industry, can you then explain why the consortium group has been given the go-ahead to build a fun park that will operate at the most for 5 months of a year on prime industrial land?
Well, what's the matter with that? I would suggest to you that theme park or fun park will create an awful lot of permanent jobs for 5 months, will provide the city an opportunity to attract tourism and bring dollars into the city. I see absolutely nothing wrong with something like that.
Last word here, Betty.
Conversely, Mr. Fontana, a prime industrial facility that is going to operate 12 months of the year and employ perhaps a couple of hundred more people, would that not logically be the best bet? Would it not be therefore more logical for City Hall to get up off their seats and go and get these people into our city instead of things that we really don't need? We are in an economic recession, and I don't care what anyone says,
we're not
pulling out of it.
Well, to suggest that we should have either an industrial facility that operates full year round and not a theme park that operates 5 months, we'd like to have both. And that's not to suggest that we've discouraged industrial development by putting a theme park in that area. We'd like to have both. The application came before council to provide for a theme park in industrial land. Council, by majority decision, felt that was an adequate use of the land, and hence we will get a theme park that will employ people.
Betty, thank you for your input this morning. Glad to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Come over to our house, Great West Steakhouse. The good food and good times, be your invitation.
Make it a special Mother's Day with the all-you-can-eat Great West Steakhouse brunch or buffet. Or try the $6.95 filet mignon house special. Enjoy giant screen TV, dancing, and happy hours 4 to 6, 9:30 to 1, Monday through Saturday at the Junction in the Great West Steakhouse.
Good food and good times, be your invitation.
Attention, all London passengers. The $15 connection is now arriving. Starting May 1st, passengers wishing to fly Air Ontario to Toronto will pay only $15 when connecting with Air Canada to anywhere in North America.
Fly Air Ontario from London for just $15 each way when connecting with Air Canada in Toronto. Use it with all types of fares, even seat sales. This is subject to government approval, so see your travel agent for more details of the $15 connection.
Hudson's, London's own department store, is having a red balloon sale. Hundreds of items from all departments are on sale at incredible savings of up to 60%. You can save on men's, ladies, and children's wear. Save on shirts, suits, dresses, all-weather coats, sportswear, and swimwear. Come to Hudson, but come early for the best selection. Look for the bright red balloons and save at Hudson's. Pick up a lucky balloon and you could win a Hudson's gift certificate. Hudson's, fashion without the high price. Dundas at Adelaide.
We've come to almost the end of the show, and I want to give each of my guests this morning a chance to sum up or make a closing comment or a closing point in this whole thing as we approach noon watch. Joe Fontana from Ward 3. Your feelings, comments, opinions, points, whatever.
Well, Wayne, let me just say, as I did at the beginning of the show, is that I believe that the issue of tactics of the John Clark and his group is the issue here. Let me just assure John and his group and people out there that our committee is open. Our doors are open. We are willing to listen and to hear from the people. And if we can make changes to the system, of course we will. To suggest that we've been hard and callous, I think, is being a little unfair. We have a very difficult job in very difficult times to try and balance the needs of our community. And as I pointed out, the real issue is that if London can be successful in terms of attracting industry and providing jobs for our people, that in certain respect, that the issue of welfare will diminish. Because ultimately, that's the answer, the solution to the problem. The fact that we are doing everything that we possibly can within the provincial guidelines and legislation, I believe that we are. The fact that we are helping those people who need help to the tune of $18.6 million a year is an indication that the London has not closed its hearts to the people who are in need.
John Clark is with the Union of Unemployed Workers, John.
Okay, well, first of all, I strongly suspect that we do have fundamentally different goals to Alderman Fontana. Our goal is to win a decent and secure future for people, and we're not just talking about it, we're taking the measures that we consider necessary to win these things. Furthermore, regarding London's welfare policies, we didn't have the opportunity to go into them in very great detail, but let it be said that the way the thing has been done in London for many, many years, and it's been gotten away with, is that the administration has basically carried out an implementation of harsh policies, that they have been able to get away with this precisely because they have been reading the barometer of the political wishes of those sitting on city council, who have said, basically, we don't want any details, just go ahead and spend as little as possible. That has gone through the Community and Protective Services Committee for a long, long time. The LUUW has challenged that. We're demanding that these politicians be accountable and that they implement some very real changes in London's welfare policies, and we're going to continue to press for it on exactly the same means and methods as we've done all along.
I'll be back with some closing comments in a moment.
When you're thirsting for real beer, taste Blue Light has it all for you.
Here's a light beer you can enjoy for the taste alone. Blue Light, with real beer flavor and a great, great taste from the same people who make Labatt's Blue, Canada's favorite beer. So when you're thirsting for a light beer with real beer taste, there's only one thing you have.
Of educational institutions under the welfare laws. So, for the past few months, this union and its leader has been stirring the pot of controversy over this and other welfare issues.
The afternoon, high of 17. For Friday, cloudy skies, the chance of thundershowers again, and a high of 17. Chance of rain, 70% today, 55% tonight, down to 20% by tomorrow. Current temperature is now 6. CFPL News reports next at 12 on Noon Watch.
Your telephone is our microphone. When you call the Wayne McLean Talk Show, 433-3121.
You're next on CFPL. Go ahead, please.
Oh, good morning. I thought that was quite an interesting commentary. I think it was Jeff Fingle who spoke yesterday after your program. Is it Jeff Fingle?
That spoke on which?
He made a commentary on this.
Jeff Gahooley, the news director, who did a piece on the John Clark Union, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was very good, and I thought afterwards, I just wondered if this John Clark had spoken a very refined upper-class English, if he wouldn't have been invited up to City Hall and treated to a luncheon.
I know what you're suggesting. I find it really ludicrous, but...
Well, it's not ludicrous. People are judged by the way they speak English, and that some people are really articulate, and they're very clever at at times articulating very cleverly a lot of hot air, and it sounds very good. And I don't think that, I think that really has quite an impact on people, the way they deliver their English. And, but in any case, I think they are trying to kill a fly with a sledgehammer there, because there's nothing really happened very much. They did sit in the mayor's office, and they put a tent up in Victoria Park. But I'm thinking back a few years when the chamber, Junior Chamber of Commerce, in their campaign against littering downtown, they drove down the main street downtown on a Saturday morning when it was crowded with shoppers and threw garbage all down Dundas Street at the people and on the streets and on the sidewalks. So, I mean, they weren't charged, and they're...
This is the Chamber of Commerce, or the Junior Chamber of Commerce. What were they trying to point out?
I just said they were an anti-littering campaign. They were trying to...
So they threw garbage out hoping that people would respond to the campaign and pick up the garbage. Is that the idea?
No, they just threw garbage at the people down Dundas Street and on along the sidewalks.
Gee, that's pretty odd.
Well, it was odd, but that was done, and yet there was no... rebuke from City Hall. Apparently, it depends who you are and the way you talk, that how your message comes across, and what the impact it has on people. And
you're absolutely convinced of that.
I am. Yeah.
Okay.
And I say that the if John Clark is trying to trying to get them to modify the rules so that the welfare people can use the welfare money to help people get off welfare, then I say he's doing a good job. And as far as that alderman on there yesterday saying that anybody can go down there and listen, then they'll listen to him. They might listen, but they don't do very much. Look how long it took the veterans to get any satisfaction out of this cenotaph thing.
I'm just trying to understand, though, in your own mind, as the issue came up on the cenotaph thing, how soon should it have been dealt with and disposed of?
Well, it didn't take that long. If they can do it now, they could have done it before.
But you're complaining here that it took so long. How long do you think it should have taken? What, month?
Well, I don't know. Oh. It's no big technical thing. If they can charge people with trespassing for going in the mayor's office, they can charge people with trespassing for using the cenotaph for some illegal
purpose. Two different issues. The big problem with the cenotaph, and still is the Charter of Rights in this country, the freedom of assembly and freedom of expression.
Well, they were assembling in the mayor's office, weren't they?
I guess that's a different situation to me, and I know your point, and I think it's a good one. In a public building, can there be private conclaves where the public cannot demonstrate or congregate or sit in?
Probably true. But in any case, I think it's, of course, this is, John Clark has done what he wanted to do. He publicized the thing and got people talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it does seem ridiculous if these people scream at people for being on welfare, and then they try to make an effort to improve themselves and use that money to get off welfare.
Yeah.
Then they're criticized there. What can they do? I've never been on welfare, and I've never been on unemployment insurance, but these people that talk about people that are on welfare, they've never been on it, so what do they know?
Okay. Thank you for your call. 433-3121, out of town. Please call us collect. Let's talk to Jim, who's been waiting. Thank you.
Good morning, Wayne.
Hi.
I'd like to discuss, I'll be very brief in my points. I'd like to discuss education and welfare in general, but I'd like to make a couple of short comments on the conversation took place yesterday with John Clark.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to take John Clark up on about three things, and I'll be very brief. I almost fell off my chair when I heard you ask him about wages, what you thought they should be, and he said they should be whatever a person would get if he was working, and I almost flipped because... if I can get what I get when I work, I don't think I'll ever go back to work again. Now, that's one thing. Now, another thing, he compared his union, I think somebody mentioned about other unions or Hamilton or something, and he compared his union with regular unions, and I resented that because I'm a union carpenter, and 80% of my locals out of work here in London, we're not up there picketing and asking people to give us jobs, although we'd like to have jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you're upset that he does, though.
Well, no, he can do what he likes. I just didn't like him comparing himself to another union. I mean, we all have our problems. Another thing, I'd like to comment on those two women, those two ladies that are A lot of people saying they're starving and they're going to be evicted and all that because they wanted to get an education. Well, the whole bloody thing is, where were the people to give them advice to tell them, look at, or didn't they know what they were going to get into if they, I mean, they were on welfare. They knew darn well if they, or they should have, or somebody should have told them, hey, you go on, you're on welfare. That's one thing. You go up there and try and go to Fanshawe, they're going to cut you off. There's regulations.
Yeah, a good point.
They're talking about the cart instead of the horse. Somebody should have wised these people up before. Now, I'm not against someone getting a further education. If there was a single parent on welfare, they wanted to go to school to be able to, you know, to get them off welfare, that sounds good from one standpoint, and I would like to see that happen, but that, I'm afraid you'd be opening a bad door. Now, what I wanted to talk about was the education and welfare. When I was a teenager back in the 40s, if I wanted to leave home before I was of age and I wanted to drop out of high school, I was on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to get nothing. And a matter of fact, my parents died when I was 16, and I wanted to continue high school, and I had to go to live with relatives. And I begged them to let me go to school, and they said no. So I went to work in a factory at night and went to high school in the daytime, and I got my education. Now, the whole thing is, now I'm a taxpayer here in London. Over 50% of my taxes go to education. Now, that's fine and dandy. And you hear lots of discussion now and again on your open line over the years about people, once you reach 50 or 60 years old, you've paid taxes all your life to educate kids. You've educated your own, put them through university maybe. Now you got to educate your sons, and you got to educate your grandsons and in infinitum as long as you live. And it doesn't seem fair that you pay education taxes all your life. But the whole thing is, if you're going... Over 50% of my taxes are education.
That's amazing. Of all taxes, income tax, sales tax, excise tax, property tax, 50%?
Well, no. I'm saying over 50% of my property tax bill,
okay,
for a city, you know, is for education.
I understand now.
Okay, I'm just talking about those, not the other taxes,
yep.
Wayne. But the whole thing is, okay, if I've got to pay over 50% of my property tax for education, that's one thing. The other 50% goes for a lot of things, and and welfare included, but a lot of other things. But the whole thing is, I don't think the welfare system should be set up as now for a tuition fund for dropouts. Now, I had a 16-year-old son that dropped out of school because he didn't, or he left home because he didn't like us telling him his hair was too long, he was looking like a bum, and so on. What does he do? He walks out of the house, walks right up to City Hall, and goes on welfare. Now, you couldn't do that when I was a kid.
I know, but times are different. It's a different day. It's a more enlightened society, I think, right now than back in the 30s and 40s. A much better society.
I agree with you there on one thing, Wayne. Where we are more enlightened, but the whole thing is, sometimes you know, the evil is more than the good that you try to do. What I'm saying is, that business could have encouraged dropouts, and no doubt in my mind that it didn't. It did encourage kids to drop out of school, drop out of home, if they felt that there's some place to go. And like I say, when I was a kid...
I know, we've heard that, and I have to run.
But the whole bloody point is, now we're going to set up the welfare fund as a tuition fund for dropouts.
Okay, you're repeating yourself now, sir.
If a person's on welfare right now, all he has to do is say, well, hell with it, I don't want to get off welfare. I think I'll say I want to further my education.
And I must go.
He can go to high school for 4 years and stay on welfare for 4 years instead of getting off in 6 months and getting a job.
Thank you for your call.
Right.
Bye-bye now.
Still a young man, my father said, my son, there's a thousand jobs in this whole land, but the steel wheel's in your blood. Now I have felt the spirit of a thousand railway songs, and every single lyric is where my heart belongs. I'm a St. B. Railway man.
Helping Canada move forward.
Switch and win with our daily double sweepstakes. You could switch and win.
Anytime's a good time.
to switch to a Commerce Daily Interest account or add to your present account.
But right now's an even better time to switch to the Commerce.
Because you could win part of $270,000 in prizes.
Are you serious? $270,000 in prizes?
Switch and win.
Switch now to a Commerce Combination account.
Or switch to a Commerce Daily Interest Savings account.
Switch and win. Switch and win.
Switch before July 6th during our Commerce Daily Double Sweepstakes.
And you could win part of $270,000 in prizes.
Are you serious? I'm switching.
Switch and win. Switch and win with our Daily Double Sweepstakes. You could switch and win.
There's never been a better time to switch to a Commerce Daily Interest account. Get complete contest details at the Commerce branch nearest you.
You can count on the Commerce.
This is Ann Robel. Today on Lifestyles, Good Touching and Bad Touching. That will be the essence of a new program to be taught to grade 3 students in Oxford County next fall in an effort to prevent child abuse. I'll talk to the author of a book called Working and Liking It. He says no matter how rotten your job is, you can come to love it. And we'll also be discussing hearing problems. That's on Lifestyles today, 12:45 to 2 p.m.
Callers at 433-3121, we thank you for your patience. The lines are tied up now. If you're a new time caller, first time caller, mention that to Jeff when you call. Back we go now to folks who have been waiting. Appreciate the patience. We've lost that call. Let's try somebody else. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Wayne.
Hello.
I have to disagree with your comment that because a person can just leave home, walk right down to City Hall and get welfare, that means we're an enlightened society. I have to say it certainly does not mean we're enlightened in that instance. There are many things we can look for, see progress in our society, and that isn't one of them. I think that's a very sad comment that people...
Yeah, but if a kid is living, and I'm not suggesting that was the case with our last caller, but if a kid is living with abusive parents and is suffering physically, emotionally, and mentally, it would seem to me that we are enlightened in that respect, that that kid does have an option, at least.
Well, he has an option, although it's interesting that those aren't the kind of people we're seeing protest in the mayor's office, are we? We're looking at young, healthy people who, through some fault of their own, and that comes through your second remark you made at 10:50 this morning there.
10:50, let me make it on
people
that.
People on welfare are on welfare through no fault of their own.
Well, I didn't say that. I said some circumstances, some people are on welfare through no fault of their own, not everybody.
No, that's okay, that's what you said.
Yep.
But the point is, you know, people's houses burn down very rarely, and acts of God really don't strike us dead in our path often. And so the point you have to realize is that most people get what they deserve, and that most things that happen to them are their own responsibility. We do get what we deserve, and our efforts or our lack of responsibility do cause our circumstances to be what they are. Most people just don't hit big red fire trucks in the middle of the street and are permanently paralyzed. You know,
do most people, though, have tragedy of some sort in their life?
They do, but they learn to deal with it. However, the people on welfare have their health, they have their wits about them through every evidence I can see, and through a mistake they may have made in their earlier years, whether it was to get pregnant, whether it was to leave school early, whether it was drugs, whether it was crime, whether it was parental abuse, this is no excuse for being, and I have to say this, a parasitic element to society, and then somehow by taking and taking and taking, insisting that you're entitled to even more. Because, you know, there's many thousands of examples of people who are born with nothing making millions, and there are many examples of people who started out with millions who blew it all away to nothing.
You see, the premise of this logic is that all of us are created with the same talents, the same drives, the same innate desires to achieve or to go ahead in life, and some people, it's just not that way. Life is, in my view, not that simple. I mean, if you ruled the world, would you have any welfare at all for anybody?
Well, the people who should be responsible.
Yeah, but what about you? If you ruled the world, would there be welfare for anybody?
There already is welfare for my family, for my friends. I employ people. I've given, lent money endlessly to people. In fact, some people who are now on welfare, I've given money just to give them money without any strings attached.
From the government, should there be any social assistance if you ruled the world?
I don't think there should be. In fact, I'm certain of it. And the reason being is that government is set up to give us roads and build-in and streetlights and basic services which we feel no one else can provide on a neutral basis. I don't think government is meant to be a bank, a loan house, a clearing house, a moral arbiter. I think we're supposed to have a code of law to adjudicate the way people behave with each other. I don't think it's meant to steal money from one group of society to give it out to elements of society where they feel there's a need.
Yeah, your perception, though, is that the government and taxation is stealing money from unwilling participants, and I'm not suggesting that most of us are willing to pay income tax, but that, see, that is your perception, I guess, isn't it?
No, that is my perception, but okay. It comes to a very important moral choice here. You know, if we're not willing to give money to people charitably on our own, obviously we feel we have a better purpose for it, whether that's our own selfish use or whether that's to be devoted to our family or some purpose we have a very clear idea of. But if we're forced, so let's face it, it is force. I mean, just because there isn't a guy with a gun at your head when they take your taxes, there's the threat of one if you don't pay it.
Well, that's your perception of force.
Well, that's not just a perception, Wayne. There are a couple ways to look at it. If one goes up to a Max Milk store and puts a gun to their head and say, listen, my grandmother needs an operation, hand me everything in your till, I don't think that makes your act any more noble because it's going to a noble purpose. So if the government comes into your home and garnishes your wages and says, well, look, there's no cop here, but if you don't pay or you try to avoid this, we're going to imprison you, I do think that's very much the same.
Well, yeah, but you're being so selective in your examples, though, because we all know of certain abuses that Revenue Canada reportedly has been involved in, but the general consensus, I would imagine, in this democracy of ours is that here is a law, you have to pay so, such and such and such and such an income tax. May not be the fairest thing in the world, but that's it. I don't think most people are going to perceive that as force or theft.
Well, they may not perceive it, but I believe that is a fact.
Okay.
Nonetheless, because we have become very weaned. I mean, most of us, unfortunately, have been bought off by various programs that we prefer. We do not realize that the cost out there is fantastic and that our children, especially for these people on welfare and other social entitlement programs, are being socked with a fabulous hidden cost. Our children, not even born, are paying for these people on welfare because we are not paying the full cost. And if we paid the full cost, we'd all be in revolution because the tax rate would be about 80%.
Yeah, I'm just trying to envision the kind of society or people, individuals in a particular geographical space that just what kind of society would it be? You would want the government basically to look to defense, I guess, huh?
Yeah, that's correct.
And the post office?
Well, the one thing the post office...
I'm just kidding you, Mark.
Well, you're assuming that, of course, people don't want to give money to those they need it. Churches do thousands and thousands, millions of dollars worth of volunteer work. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, the churches have a vested interest in making sure that you are on the road to recovery and not a permanent dependent of the church, because they can neither afford it, and nor do they regard that as in your best interest to be dependent upon someone.
Yeah, but this assumes that people have a rectitude, if you will, or have a morality and a true care and concern for other people. Philosophy of libertarianism assumes that people are quote-unquote moral, and to me, it ain't that way in life.
Well, I do believe that people are, by and large, moral. Unless you have an optimistic view of man, there's nearly no point in assuming, because if man is basically evil, then the worst elements of that evil are certainly going to be gravitating toward government.
I'm not suggesting that man is basically evil. I just don't think people are anxious to run around and help out every single person.
Look at all the churches there. Look at the Salvation Army, how much money it raises. Look how much people gave in two nights alone. They gave $150,000.
That's very laudable, but 40% of the budget of this country, and what are we spending, about $90 billion a year here? 40% of that goes to social services. Now, are you trying to tell me that the church and charities are going to be able to raise $35 billion?
Well, I believe that the social services of this country are bloated 10 times beyond what they ought to be. For example, many people who are easily, adequately prepared in their pensions are receiving extra pensions and Canada Pension Plan when they have earned easily enough money to provide for themselves, and after 40 years in the workforce, they certainly should have. The biggest beneficiaries of the welfare system aren't the people on welfare themselves, but the vast middle class who are employed to administer these welfare programs. You'll notice they're all paid between $24,000 and $50,000 a year to administer programs to people that get $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, and $15,000 in welfare.
Mark, it's always stimulating. I do have to run.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks for the points. 4333. What do you say to that? You know, he's saying, Joe is saying to you that, hey, we agree with this idea here that there is a discriminatory factor, John Clark, and they have gone on record. What do you say to the fact that this is the law of the province, and really, are you barking up the wrong tree and going after London City Council? Shouldn't you be down at Queen's Park?
In a certain sense, we should be down in Queen's Park. We intend to go down to Queen's Park. But that doesn't mean, given the situation we're dealing with, that we're not going to, at the same time, fight on a municipal level. We think we have to do that. I can't be particularly impressed with the efforts the city has made, even if it were true they don't have the power to give this money. We can't even persuade the mayor to pick up the phone and call Hamilton and investigate our suggestion that in Hamilton, in precisely the same situation as in London, people are able to attend a community college. I have here a copy of the Toronto Social Assistance Manual that governs welfare policies in that city, and they make quite clear that they will, in the case of single employables, make exceptions and allow people to attend college. I have no information that they've had their funding cut off as a result. This city could, I repeat, give welfare assistance to people in that situation.
Well, Wayne, can I say about the Hamilton
situation? Can you be brief on this, because
yes.
I want to get back to
City Council last night in dealing with this issue. We will, and it will come back to our committee, we will specifically ask the minister, and we have, and Hamilton, why they can do it. There is one recourse that the city can do, and they can be prepared to pay 100 cent dollars and not get any subsidy from the province if, in fact, we wanted to do this. But the only thing that I can suggest, if we did that, we would cause those single male heads and single people to be ineligible to receive welfare assistance. The deputy minister says that quite precisely in his letter to us.
Steve, you have the last word. Be brief, please.
Okay, I will. All of this, I think what really summed up the feelings that I feel about our city council is when the mayor made that fantastic statement that John Clark has had his day in the sun. I think as the sun is setting on the city council and Mr. Gleason, and the daybreak is just coming up for the unemployment group.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Okay, thank you.
433-3121 if you're trying to reach us this morning.
Here he comes.
It's him. It's Cedric.
Cedric, is it true what they're saying about Leon's Don't Pay a Cent event, that it now includes appliances?
Cedric, a comment on your plans to offer quality Famous Name appliances, as well as carpet, area rugs, and furniture with no down payments, no interest, and no payments now? Oh!
Will you be making a formal statement, Cedric, about Leon's appliances and incredible savings with no payments till August 1st, 1984 for every $500 minimum purchase on approved credit?
We've heard reports that you are the financial genius behind Leon's 75th anniversary year Don't Pay a Cent event.
And now this brilliant scheme to include major brand name appliances.
Please, Cedric, a brief comment for our listeners.
Oh, it's no use. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Cedric will not take credit for this incredible Don't Pay a Cent event with no payments till August on furniture, carpet, area rugs, and now appliances.
Cedric's brilliance, Leon's values. It's easy to see why they say there's no place like Leon's.
There's no place like Leon's.
Did you know there isn't a single day goes by that someone somewhere in London says thank heavens for Bob Turnbull Flowers? It's true. Bob Turnbull Flowers have meant many things to many Londoners over the past 25 years. One-of-a-kind, stunning floral creations have played an important role in the celebrations and sorrows of day-to-day life. When the occasion arrives for you to send your very best, send the very best. Send Bob Turnbull Flowers, Richmond and Oxford in the Village, and say thank heavens for Bob Turnbull Flowers.
Uniforms Unlimited celebrates Nurses Week with all the latest uniforms at 10% off. All the designer separates, culottes, skirts, blouses, jumpers, all at 10% off for Nurses Week. Everything in the store, including all Uniforms Unlimited's unique selection of summer sleepwear and cool cotton robes, just in time for Mother's Day, will be at 10% off. Drop in this week during Nurses Week because there's a draw for a white sister uniform. That's Nurses Week at 226 Piccadilly, just east of Richmond in the Village. Open Thursday and Friday, 9 to 9.
Numbers of ideas and concepts are going by here from each of my guests this morning that we could really zero in on and dwell on for a couple of minutes. And we're going to hit some of those ideas and concepts between now and noon. But for the meantime, we have a number of people who have been very good and very patient. Thank you for waiting. You're on CFPL.
Yes. Mr. Clark, you certainly, for a union man, you're just one of these typical people that are unionists. Anybody that goes to a mayor's residence on a Sunday morning, you certainly don't have any consideration for anybody, do you?
I have consideration for quite a lot of people.
Well, do you? Do you know that Sunday's a day of worship, and here you go out and start protesting? I am an unemployed person. I've been out of work for over a year and a half, and I certainly think that the actions you're taking against our poor mayor
and these other people of council, I think it's getting way out of hand. You go in, you walk into the mayor's office, you think you can take over City Hall, and you have no rights in doing that. And I know a lot of unemployed people that are tired of your actions. You've got to grow up. You just cannot have everything your own way. You're fighting with the municipal government, which is number one. You're way out of line. If you're going to argue, argue with the provincial government, because they're the ones that set up the guidelines.
Well, you're inaccurate in stating that.
No, I'm not, because I know it's not the municipal government. They only...
Okay, let's give them a chance, at least anyway, caller, to respond to the charges you're making, okay?
Okay.
All right. Let me explain the situation to you. What you have is a situation where the province lays down the law. That is correct. The province also, as you say, has some guidelines. But each city is allowed a considerable amount of discretion in enforcing the General Welfare Assistance Act. Now, that is a statement of fact, and it is true. And we are taking issue with those portions of municipal discretion, and we are responding accordingly. I'm afraid, simply can't deny that.
Well, certainly, I think when you say, like, these people are complaining they want to go back to Fanshawe, you people should at least be happy. I'm living on the same amount of income, $346 a month, and I'm eating fine. Mind you, don't have T-bone steaks, but people should be damn glad what they have, because look at back in the Depression, the people didn't have anything. You people should appreciate what you have. The unions have destroyed this country. It's fellas like yourself have just put everybody else out of work because of your ignorance and your high wages, and I'm sick of it. And as far as I'm concerned, your union is illegal, and it should be disbanded.
You don't think you're maybe making a little extreme statement there, that the unions have destroyed this country? I mean...
Certainly have, Wayne. Look at the wages that have gone up and put people out of work. They're just way too high. We can't even compete with Japan or any other country.
Is that true?
Well,
the unions destroyed the country, do you think, John?
If you feel that the solution to unemployment is for us to all work for the same wages as people do in Japan, then of course you're entitled to your opinion. But then we have to consider maybe the wages in Japan are a little high. We should work for what they do in Mexico, and we should go on down the scale until we live on a complete pittance. We reject that. And we think that the unions of unemployed workers and the trade union movement have a very, very legitimate right to fight for certain rights.
Well, when you're going to come up, you're going to be up in court in a few weeks, and if you don't pay the fine, I guarantee you, if I was a judge, you would be put in jail for a year, because your behavior is disgusting, and the people of this city are not going to put up with it.
Well, I have to be exceedingly thankful that you're not the judge.
You're lucky, mister, because you have just trying to disrupt city council, and they've done a hell of a good job in this city. And as far as I'm concerned, I hope they get tough with you, because that's the only way you're going to learn your lesson.
Thank you for your comments today. Bye-bye. 22 to go before 11 here at CFPL. 433-3121 is the number. Out of town, anywhere in southwestern Ontario, call us, collect.
Well, Dick, the action is really heating up now that it's playoff time in the shoot-to-score lottery.
There's a lot at stake, because now every ticket sold could be worth
$100,000.
$100,000? $100,000 instantly.
Now it's Larry Smith on a breakaway. He's coming along the counter past the chocolate bars.
Yes.
Oh, he sneaked the potato chips right out of the wrappers.
Yes.
He buys a ticket!
He's not messing around. He's going straight for the $100,000 number. He scratches.
What a scratch!
He scores! Now, Shoot the Score is even better, because you can win $100,000 instantly. Plus, there are still thousands of regular instant prizes of up to $10,000 waiting to be won.
Terrific work by Larry Smith. I wonder if he'll get a trophy, Dick.
What for?
Well, he just made himself the most valuable player.
Scratcher.
The man's a player.
Scratcher.
Come on, use your eyes, man.
Shoot to Score.
Now you can win $100,000 instantly in Shoot to Score.
Don't suffer with the heat this summer. Call the experts at Automatic Heating and Cooling. They'll tell you that a Lennox air conditioner is the only way to go. Let them install air conditioning in your home now. They can do it on any forced air furnace. Call 451-5490 today. Think of stepping into central air conditioning comfort. Automatic Heating and Cooling gives free estimates, so call 451-5490 to arrange yours. The staff would love to help you beat the heat this summer at Automatic Heating and Cooling.
SVP. Now, let me see. If you're looking for a lesson in French, it stands for s'il vous plaît, and it means if you please. But if you're looking for a lesson in value, it stands for Simpson's Value Plus, and it means priced right fashion, styled right for today. Simpson's Value Plus, for men and women, where you can be fashion conscious and value conscious at the same time. So, for me, Make it Simpsons SVP.
You'll find SVP fashions in Simpsons' current Dress for Less flyer.
Via Rail and CFPL 980 present Spring Training, an exciting six-week contest right here on this station with lots of fabulous prizes. And what prizes? You may win one of two fabulous Via Rail tours of a lifetime, a dream vacation for up to four people, plus $1,000 cash. Just purchase a Via Rail ticket before May 18th and ask for your entry form. Enter now. Stay tuned to this station and get into Spring Training with Via Rail.
Let me talk for just a second to both of my guests this morning about this one aspect. Now, if I understand this, Joe Fontana, John Clark is saying that the city can indeed do this, that you can give people welfare checks while they go to Fanshawe under discretionary powers. Do I understand you correctly when you say that?
That's correct.
Okay.
No, that's wrong. True? No. What John has said, that there is a certain amount of municipal discretion within the General Welfare Act, and according to the province, we have to appoint a welfare administrator. The welfare administrator for London is Kathy Scanlon.
Mm-hmm.
Within the 800 or so pages of the General Welfare Act, there is a certain amount of municipal discretion. In every one of the 15 points that the London Union of Unemployed Workers has brought forward to our committee to deal with, where they've made the point of municipal discretion, we have looked at the municipal discretion, and we have been convinced that there is very little municipal discretion. Where there has been municipal discretion, such as the job search programs and such as the Fanshawe School, we have at least tried to try our best and go to the provincial government either for a clarification or for change in law. But where there is municipal discretion, I think we have acted, and we've acted responsibly. Now, as I said at the beginning of the program, if, in fact, we want to treat all male heads of family and single people and let them go to Fanshawe College, what we will do is we can foot the bill. There's no doubt about it. But then again, the provincial government will say you have caused those people to be ineligible for welfare assistance. So we can give them the education, which may be very worthwhile, but we, in effect, will cause them greater harm by taking away their welfare benefits.
Historically, the province is very loath to interfere in the activities of municipalities when it comes to providing assistance. I repeat that people in precisely this situation in the cities of Windsor, Hamilton, and Toronto are attending college, and I have no information that they are paying 100 cent dollars. That it is being tolerated. If you solicit a response from the deputy minister, is it okay to deny people in these circumstances? Almost invariably, he's going to write back and say, "Yes, of course, go ahead, boys."
All right,
that doesn't mean you can't do it.
Okay, but the point is that you know for a fact that people are receiving welfare checks and going to community colleges in Hamilton, Windsor, and Toronto.
It states,
and they're not being penalized in any way under the General Assistance Act.
It states right here in the Toronto manual that exceptions will be made in the case of so-called ineligible single employables.
Well, Wayne, let me say that our city social administrator has been in contact with Hamilton, and it is not the policy of Hamilton to do precisely as John Clark has indicated. Now, whether or not there are certain people that are on welfare that are going to Mohawk College and in fact receiving welfare benefits may very well be, but it's not the policy of Hamilton to do so.
Well, sometimes which way is right here? I mean,
we will get a clarification. We've asked for that clarification from Hamilton, and we will take a look at what these other municipalities are doing. But we have a letter from the deputy mm-hmm. minister of this province that says it is against the General Welfare Act to do precisely what he's saying.
What are these people to do then under the way it's described by Joe Fontana? I mean, they seem, at least we're getting the impression, John, that they want to do something, that they want to go through the right process. Mm-hmm. Can't you wait for that to happen? Is it necessary to build tent cities and sit in the mayor's office and all the rest of it?
Well, we have two women who are about to be thrown on the streets that we are representing, so the prospect of waiting is a particularly bleak one.
Ms. Ide and Craigle, I believe?
That's correct,
are the
yeah,
two?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
Wayne, my understanding is that these two women have appealed the decision of the city, and the appeal is being presently looked at, and the decision is going to come down. But let's not give the impression out there that there isn't an alternative for those people, that we are denying education. The province says precisely that there are other options, and it doesn't have to be
going to secondary school.
It can go secondary school. It can have correspondence courses. So there is an avenue where people are allowed to upgrade themselves.
How about it?
These two women are in a situation where they're well into a course that was set up by the province.
Mm-hmm.
They had no knowledge that they would be denied assistance prior to that. They started taking the course and found themselves cut off. They want to continue with this course rather than get locked into long-term education at a high school, and I think that's pretty reasonable. They've taken a very, very laudable initiative, and I think they should be supported in this initiative.
Is it not possible, Joe Fontana, to expedite the thing, to find out on the telephone what exactly is happening in Hamilton, Toronto, and Windsor, and then seriously look at doing something similar with these people in the same circumstance?
Well, this is not the first time that we've heard about Hamilton. The London Union of Unemployed Workers and a number of other people have told us about 6 weeks ago that this was occurring. We have made representations to Hamilton. We have gotten the answers directly from Hamilton that it is not their policy. But to clarify the issue, we will do it again. But let me just indicate, perhaps Mr. Clark has indicated something that we as a city, in terms of providing service, can do. He indicated that those two women, had they known that they were going to be ineligible for welfare assistance if they attended Fanshawe, perhaps their caseworker should have been advised of that particular question and should have advised them right from the beginning that you have your welfare benefits in jeopardy if you do certain things, and perhaps let them know about the options. And I think that's, if there's an improvement in the system that we can do, I'm sure that that sounds reasonable.
433-3121 is the number. If you're out of town, we invite you to call Collect.
The sun shines hot, the breezes blow warm, and the lakes run cool, clear, and blue. Ontario presents the sounds of summer. Is coming at you, and it's looking good. 48 pages packed with 1,000 sensational holiday opportunities. Your complete guide to all the places where the world comes to play. Yours to discover this weekend in your newspaper.
So come on, everybody, get up and discover your Ontario.
This message from the Ontario Ministry of Tourism and Recreation.
Your next-door neighbor may have been the first person to tell you about the cooperators. After all, good news is hard to keep to yourself. But only a cooperator's representative can tell you the whole story. The fact of the matter is, the cooperators means insurance. All lines, life, home, auto, commercial, farm, and travel. The Cooperators is the largest Canadian-owned all-lines insurance company, with over 200 offices in Canada. We're a strong Canadian company, so you can count on us to be there when you need us. You deal direct for policies, premiums, claims, and service. That's why we can handle your claim promptly and fairly. The Cooperators one-stop insurance protects your life, your home, your car, your business, farm, or vacation. So your neighbor may have been the first to tell you the good news, but only your Cooperators representative can put it to work for you. Remember, the Cooperators means insurance. Call or visit our office today.
When London's Union of Unemployed Workers set up a tent city in Victoria Park, 980 News brought you the comments of union organizer John Clark.
If the city administration is going to make people homeless by not paying them benefits, then what better place to be homeless than right in front of City Hall?
CFPL Radio News. Up to the minute and down to earth.
Helen, you're next on CFPL 980. Go ahead.
Hello, Wayne. Since I teach at Fanshawe College in this program, I'd like to provide a little bit of information about what exactly the situation is. Teachers who taught in the program called Pre-Intensive Preparation...
That's the PIP program, right?
Yeah, that's right, the PIP program, Pre-Technology Intensive Preparation Program. The teachers were told that this with a special program financed by the provincial government to get the youth and the unemployed back to work. And everyone, all the teachers were really excited about this program. And the students were provided free tuition and free books, and they were given a new chance in life.
Okay,
and
under what ministry, if I might ask, Helen?
That I am not...
Would it be Community and Social Services? Would it be the Ministry of Education, possibly?
I'm not sure.
All right, because it would appear that you have one group doing one thing, which is being called into question here on this program, as you know, by another ministry.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure what it was, but I will explain what happened. Then the students who were enrolled in, I had 50 excited students in my two different math classes at the beginning in January. Students, after 2 weeks in the program, began dropping out because they were cut off welfare. They had no knowledge that they would be cut off welfare ahead of time. By the end of the program, out of 50 students, I had 20 students.
Sure.
I would like to say that this program, like, it would have been actually financially better for the city to keep them on welfare, because it's an intensive program. They could get through 4 years of high school in 2 years through going through school all year round intensively. These people would have been off the welfare rolls in 2 years. Then they could get into any of the technician programs at Fanshawe.
So it's sort of short-term pain for long-term gain. What's your reaction to what Helen is saying here? She's a teacher out at Fanshawe, involved in one of these courses, I assume.
Yeah, we've heard Helen at the committee. And again, City Council supports what she just said. I think it makes a great deal of sense. If, in fact, an educational program of this kind is available that will help our welfare recipients upgrade themselves and go back into the job market, that's fantastic. And I, as one council member, agree with that totally. But there seems to be a lack of understanding of how the political process works. The fact remains is that you don't have to convince municipal council that that's what you want. We've already made representations on your behalf to the minister that we would like to see such a program be endorsed. The fact remains is that the deputy minister, again, has told us that that situation would cause people to be ineligible. But let me suggest to you, the minister also says that female heads of family and certain unemployable and certain dependents can qualify for Fanshawe College of programs such as the ones that you've suggested. So we are talking about the male heads of family and the single people who are being deprived. And I agree with you, Helen. We have made those representations, and we will continue to go to bat for you to try and change the legislation.
I'm sorry, Joe, but I don't agree with what you are saying, because I went to your committee 6 weeks ago and explained to you that they are doing this in Hamilton at Mohawk College, and John Clark is right. It is the discretionary policies of the city. I traveled to Toronto myself at my own expense to talk to provincial politicians about this. I was unable to see Frank Dre, but I went in to see the Honorable Robert Eaton, who is Progressive Conservative Member of Provincial Parliament for Middlesex, and he told me that each city has a discretionary policy, and he doesn't understand what in heaven's name they are doing down here in London.
Well, Mr.
And also, just a minute, Jim Silverthorne, who's the academic coordinator at Fanshawe, went to Toronto as well at his own expense, and he spoke to these people. We have the information that it is the discretionary policy of the city, and I told your committee 6 weeks ago, Glenn Howlett said that I was wrong. Everybody on that committee would not listen to me. The mayor refused to listen to me and said that I was insulting. I did not insult any member on the committee. And I have been put down by your committee every time I've gone.
Okay, let's give Joe a chance to jump in here.
I'm looking at a letter right now from the deputy minister who indicates that what you've just said is incorrect. Now, again, we get back to whether or not Toronto and Hamilton are doing this within the General Welfare Act. And I suggest to you that we are going to find that answer out. But to indicate or say that this council and myself and my committee has been not supportive on this issue, I think is wrong. We've made the representations. Now, to suggest that our committee has not played fair, I suggest to you is that the democratic process, and we welcome public participation, we welcome groups and citizens to come to our committee and to discuss policies of all sorts with us, and if an improvement to the system can be made, we will make them. No system is perfect.
I would like to say
also... We'll give you the last word at this point, okay, Helen?
Last word? There's a couple of things,
Helen,
I want...
Helen, the last word at this point, all right?
On this point, I went to see the mayor with the two students, Gabriel and Brenda, and the mayor said that confrontation tactics don't work. Well, I will tell you that dialogue with the mayor does not work. He told me to call up the ministers myself, to call Hamilton myself. I have spent hundreds of dollars on this, and I think that the city can do some work and help these students, and Brenda and Gabriel are going to be evicted this month if they don't get some money, and I would like to ask you to have some compassion for those women.
Well, why don't you have Brenda and Gabriel call me personally, and I will help them as much as I possibly can, as I do a number of people. In the last week, I have gotten 15 calls from people on welfare assistance that ask for my help, as they do other aldermen. And believe it or not,